Hey everyone, welcome back to the Michael Lofton Show on Reason and Theology. So I'm a little under the weather today, so bear with me if I sound a little nasally. Okay, so some U.S. Catholics were just polled, and according to a new survey, the majority of U.S. Catholics support the death penalty and reject what the teaching of the church currently is on the death penalty, most notably found in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. So I want to take a look at that and then have maybe a conversation about the question of the death penalty historically, and is there room for disagreement with the church on this matter? You know, is this one of those cases where, you know, Catholics are bound to hold to the current position, or is there some wiggle room here? So that's what I want to have a conversation about today. And of course, feel free to interact with me there in the comment section, as this is a live show. And so I'll see your comments and your questions and happy to interact with them. And I do want to remind you, go ahead and hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. I'd greatly appreciate your support for this channel. So CNA just posted a an EWTN survey of U.S. Catholic bishops. I'm sorry, Catholics in general, not just bishops. 55% of U.S. Catholics support the death penalty for a person convicted of murder specifically. And 20% say that they oppose the death penalty in certain circumstances like that. And then 25% were unsure. So 25%, they're just not sure where they are on the question. I don't know if they're maybe just not sure of what the teaching is, or they don't know what to make of the teaching. And so they just kind of, they don't know if there's some wiggle room here. So they would rather just not speculate. That part is a little unclear, but 20% say, okay, they're against it. 55% are in favor of it. And so the survey is noting that the 55% who are in favor of the death penalty are very explicitly rejecting the current Catechism of the Catholic Church. Now, what some people don't know, in fact, I had somebody point it out to me in the comment section just the other day. I was having a conversation with the audience about the death penalty, and somebody pointed out to me, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, you know, rejects the death penalty. And they argued it has always rejected the death penalty. And I had to explain to them, well, no, actually, in many cases, the church was in favor of the death penalty. And I've gone over this extensively in church history, but also even recent editions of the Catechism up until recently allowed for the death penalty in certain cases. It was revised just a few years ago by Pope Francis. Maybe some people don't realize that, but that is a very recent revision because Pope Francis kind of took it a step further than John Paul II. John Paul really limited the application of the death penalty and effectively said that it's rare if it should ever be used. Whereas Pope Francis went ahead and went a step further and said it's inadmissible in all cases at this point. And, you know, I had somebody in the comment section say that the Catechism says that the death penalty is doctrinally immoral and dogmatically immoral. And we have to be precise with our language. The church has never said that. What it has said is that it is inadmissible. And that's the current position, as opposed to in previous ages where it was admissible. And in some cases, the church argued it was a divine duty. And the basis for that, according to the popes that were arguing for that, was Romans chapter 13, where the Apostle Paul talks about how the secular authorities wield the sword and they don't wield it in vain, and they're God's vengeance on earth for those who commit capital offenses. And so some popes felt like we have to employ the death penalty and we have no other choice because we would be going against God who allows for it in Romans 13. And, you know, for quite some time, that was the majority position of most popes. You could see this reflected even in the developments that come out of the ecumenical councils. We have some ecumenical councils that talk about, you know, heretics. The secular arm is to exterminate them. And here the word for exterminate, the Latin term used for it, meant more than like just banishing, which is how some people have attempted to translate it. But it actually meant like putting them to death, destroying them utterly, which is why usually it was done by burning at the stake or something like that. So a lot of times you have popes who take that position. There were some minority opinions of some popes who argued against the death penalty, but that was a minority. So looking through the article here by Catholic News Agency, after it goes over the results, it says, based on the poll, Catholics who attend Mass regularly are much more likely to say they oppose the death penalty than Catholics whose attendance is less frequent. That's interesting. Among Catholics who attend Mass at least once per week, 52% say they support the death penalty for convicted murderers, 26% say they oppose it, and 22% are unsure. For Catholics who attend less than once per week, 57% say they support the death penalty. So Mass attendance doesn't actually appear to really impact a person's perspective on this question, it would seem, in the U.S., according to these results. It continues, although many Catholics still support the death penalty, a 2024 analysis of the Association of Religion Data Archives, this survey shows a decline in Catholic support for the death penalty in recent decades, especially among those who attend weekly Mass. The Catechism, per the 2018 revision, that's the revision I was just telling you about recently, by Pope Francis, states this: the Church teaches in the light of the gospel that the death penalty is inadmissible because it's an attack on the inviolability and dignity of the person. So for some time, I thought that, you know, one of the reasons why it's considered inadmissible by the Church today is because there's enough to kind of safeguard the security of society by giving people life sentences. But the more I look at it, the more I see that the justification for the position of the Church at this point on the death penalty is more rooted in the question of the dignity of the human person. So the Church is arguing that human persons retain their dignity even after capital offenses, and to employ the death penalty would be to violate their human dignity. So it seems that the Church is rooting this not in some kind of situation socially where, you know, the penal system is such that we can handle murderers and life sentences and protect society that way. It doesn't really appear that it's rooting it in that. For the most part, it's rooting it in the dignity of the human person. That does cause some difficulty because, you know, for a very large part of church history, the magisterium was teaching this is something authorized by God, you know. And if you look at the Old Testament, it certainly was authorized in the Old Testament. The New Testament, there's a case that could be made in Romans 13 for the death penalty. It naturally raises the question, okay, if this is a violation of human dignity, that would then mean God was commanding something that violates human dignity. Now, maybe people are comfortable saying that, but I think that that is the cost of the position of the Church, where one has to say, yes, God is certainly aware of human dignity, but he allowed for the violation or commanded the violation of it in the Old Testament, and maybe in Romans 13 allows for it there. Although the Church says, but it's contrary to the gospel in some cases to implement it, to which we have to wonder how that's consistent with Romans 13. So this has arguably been one of those areas where a lot of people have struggled to try to understand the church's current position on the death penalty and have found the previous position a little bit more coherent and a little bit more consistent with the Bible. I think that is probably why, due to the fact that this challenge hasn't been overcome theologically for probably the majority of Catholics, I don't think the majority could explain how, you know, the church's current position makes sense in light of scripture and in light of the historical position in church history. Due to that, I honestly think that's probably why we're seeing 55% saying, you know what, I accept the death penalty, even though they know they're rejecting the catechism of the Catholic Church on the matter. Perhaps they just feel like it makes more sense. You know, the difficulty here, however, is the church is very clear about the question of dissent, and it never allows for dissent, that is, the rejecting of church teaching. But it puts a person in a difficult situation because they ask the question, church teaching in what time period? You know, the church teaching right now, the church teaching prior to 2018, the church teaching in, you know, 405 AD, at what period, you know, at what time period do they owe their assent? And that kind of raises the question of, you know, evaluating magisterial documents and weighing them, and then you would give your assent to the teaching that carries a greater deal of weight to it, a greater deal of authority behind it, which I've talked about a lot in my lectures. If you want to go and check them out, my lectures on the magisterium, I go over this in detail. It's rtcourses.com. Just click on the magisterium bundle. You'll see the lectures that I teach at the seminary. At the university. And you'll see the course on how to evaluate magisterial propositions. And I think you'll find it helpful. Now, back to the point on dissent. The church doesn't allow for dissent. You can see this in Donum Veritatis. It outright says that you can't dissent. And you have that obligation of religious submission of intellect and will to the current teaching of the church. Again, it raises the question, okay, well, what about previous teachings? To what degree of obligation is there degree of assent that's owed to them? And again, that's going to be debated based upon how authoritative you evaluate those previous teachings to be versus the current position of the church. Be that as it may, what the church does do is that if you're really, really struggling, especially for somebody who's well-trained in theology, a theologian, if they're really struggling with a church teaching that's not infallibly taught, it's one of those non-infallible teachings, the church says in those cases, you know, when you've done everything that you can to try to make sense of the church's teaching and you just can't do it, Donum Veritatis indicates that you can withhold assent from that teaching. So you're not rejecting the teaching because you're still open to being convinced and adopting it, but you can't just yet accept it because you don't see how it's coherent, how it makes sense, how it lines up with previous teachings or something like that. So there's kind of that, you know, a little bit of wiggle room there where the church allows you to withhold assent, but it doesn't allow for you to outright reject and dissent against a teaching. However, what we're seeing from the results is dissent, outright rejecting of the teaching. So the magisterium doesn't allow for that, but it does allow for that kind of middle position of withholding assent. So maybe some additional catechesis is needed here on part of the U.S. Catholics who maintain this position. But in fairness to them, the additional catechesis is also needed, not just in the question of obligations to the magisterium and religious submission of intellect and will. I think the formation and catechesis that's needed at this point is how the church's current position makes sense in light of previous teachings of the church and also in light of the Bible. I think really the magisterium needs to step in and clarify that at the moment, because what it's expecting people to do is assent to the current teaching, but it's not explaining to people, here's how it makes sense. And that's going to be really difficult for some people. You know, you could be heavy-handed as a parent and just tell your kids, do what I say. Why? Just because I said it. Yeah, you could do that, but, you know, at some point, that's going to be really taxing on your children, and they might want to know a little bit of the wisdom behind some of your decisions, especially if they appear to be, you know, counterintuitive, especially if the reasoning behind them isn't very apparent. So here's where it would be helpful for the church to be pastoral, to accompany people and explain to people the current teaching and how that makes sense in light of the previous teaching. Otherwise, people are just going to continue to be confused. So I found this article fascinating. I'll put a link to it in the comment section. I do want to grab a few of the comments here in the chat. One person says, I think lots of you would kill Christ. I have no idea where that comment's coming from. It's a pretty wild comment. Pretty presumptuous, I would say. Another person says, wouldn't you say commands under the Mosaic covenant vanished after it was fulfilled in Christ? Why not observe the entire law then? Well, of course, you know, historically there have been distinctions of various aspects of the law. So you have the moral law, you have ceremonial law, you have things that can be distinguished, right? And so when you say that the law has passed away, surely you're not talking about moral obligations, right? And the death penalty, yeah, there was a component of it that was, you could say, ceremonial or pertained to the government of the church. I'm sorry, of the covenant community. But it still was morally permissible at the time, right? How does that make sense if this violates human dignity? Question still remains. And as I said already, it's not just an issue of the Old Testament. You have Romans 13 and the New Testament as well. And it's not just the New Testament. You have popes and ecumenical councils that authorize the use of the death penalty. And so you have to make sense of that. It's not as easy as just saying, well, the Old Testament is done away with. That's never been the position of the church in any kind of sophisticated way. You know, the church basically says, okay, some of the ceremonial laws, some of the priestly laws are fulfilled and no longer applicable, but moral components still apply, right? Okay. All right. So one person says capital punishment is murder. If you profile and have no problem with capital punishment, you're just pro-birth. So again, if capital punishment is murder, then God authorized murder in the Old Testament and arguably in the New Testament. So you're going to have to make sense of that, right? Hence the difficulty. Now, your comments remind me of something Pope Leo said. The survey that they were discussing also says that 70% are in favor of Pope Leo, which is actually down because 75% of U.S. Catholics were in favor of Pope Francis. But 70% like Pope Leo here in the United States. Now, I find that interesting just because the 55% that support the death penalty, I don't know how they're not impacted, I guess, in their evaluation of Pope Leo, because Pope Leo told them they're not pro-life. Pope Leo said it very explicitly on multiple occasions that if you are pro-death penalty, you're not pro-life, which came as a shock to a lot of people in the pro-life movement. Because, you know, a lot of times people have been against abortion, but they've been in favor of the death penalty, and they felt that they were pro-life warriors. To be told by the Pope they're not really pro-life, you know, a lot of people felt that was a huge slap in the face. That's evidently not reflected in the popularity of Pope Leo, but Pope Leo did say that. So the 55% who are in favor of the death penalty in the United States, Pope Leo is telling them they're not really pro-life. And that's going to be a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people, because they're just going to have to wonder, okay, is God not pro-life in the Old Testament? What about in the New Testament, where it seems it's taught there? Is he not pro-life there? Were all these popes who authorized the use of the death penalty, were they not pro-life? You know, people are going to naturally struggle with that question when those kinds of comments were made. Excuse me. So, looking through the comment section. Okay, so interesting comment here. Somebody says Pope Leo should keep his political opinions to himself. That's an interesting view. It's never been the position of the popes historically, right? Popes have always asserted their role and authority and right to comment on political matters, always. And they have. And for what, from 754 to 1870, popes were also political leaders. But popes have always weighed in on the question of politics. To kind of suggest that they need to stay in their lane, only speak on faith and morals, maybe demonstrates a level of ignorance here, because politics inevitably does touch on faith and morals. You can't speak about politics without engaging a question of faith and morals. So the Pope has every right to comment on political matters. That doesn't mean his perspective is always right. But if you're going to say he shouldn't comment on it, implicit in your position there is the assumption that somehow politics are separable from faith and morals. And that's just not realistic. And I think we know intuitively that isn't the case. I mean, state's policy on abortion, is that just a political matter? No, that impacts faith and morals. The state's position on divorce, is that just neutral? No, it impacts faith and morals. Immigration, is that just neutral? Is that merely political? No, it impacts faith and morals. That doesn't mean the Pope's opinion is always right. But it does mean that he has a right to comment on it. It is within his lane. And I don't see how you could say otherwise, at least if you're a Catholic. Now, if you're a Protestant, that those kinds of comments would make, I guess, a little bit more sense. Okay, so one commenter says they're getting my book, their wife is getting them my book, Answering Orthodoxy for Christmas. Awesome, awesome. Hey, let me know what you think about it when you get a chance to read it. I'd love to hear your feedback. Okay, looking through the comments, seeing if there's anything else there. Looking through the article, I think we covered pretty much everything from it. So I'll just put a link to the article in the show notes if y'all want to go and read the rest of it. Let's see. One commenter says, nothing new under the sun, further evidence of Western Christianity, bloodlust, and hypocrisy. Is the death penalty bloodlust and hypocrisy? I guess some people would see it that way, right? Certainly God in the Old Testament doesn't see it as based on some kind of notion of bloodlust or hypocrisy, right? So I don't know how you could say that if you're a Christian. Now, maybe you're an atheist, right? Or maybe you're just not a Christian. Maybe it would make a little bit more sense for you to say that, from that perspective. But if you're a Christian, I don't know how you could say that coherently. Somebody says, I would say politics ties to religion because of morality, but not faith itself. I could be wrong, but politics should reflect the church's morality, but don't know necessarily faith itself like dogma. I understand what you're saying. I think that it inevitably touches on questions of the faith as well, not just morals, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. All right, here's a question. What kind of shepherd would he be if he did not weigh in on the moral questions we face? True, Very true and very good point. But you see, you're pointing out that these are moral questions, whereas I think maybe some of the commenters are assuming that they're not, and that somehow politics can be divorced from faith and morals, which I've obviously challenged just now. So I agree with you. That being said, I would like to see respectfully, I would like to see more engagement from Pope Leo and the Magisterium on some other pressing needs on faith and morals today. I think there's a lot of them that the Magisterium really needs to address, and maybe should prioritize those even more than some of these other things that the, you know, popes are talking about, and even that the Magisterium is engaging. And I say that with all due respect. I think there are some areas that it almost feels like, you know, the Magisterium is missing in action, and it really needs to take by the reins. Just one perfect example would be Pride Masses. They're becoming really prevalent. Bishops and priests are celebrating these openly. This is obviously contrary to the faith of the church. It is obviously also sacrilegious. I've never seen an encyclical against Pride Masses, but I've seen numerous encyclicals against climate change. I understand that the church needs to talk about questions concerning the environment. I get that. But at some point you would think, I don't know, maybe stuff like Pride Masses need to be addressed, right? Okay. Somebody asked, why are you more critical of Leo than Francis? I'm not. I appreciate you asking the question. I think that that's a straw man. But thank you for asking the question. The death penalty is a hard teaching to accept, but it is the gospel. Per Jesus, let he who is without sin throw the first stone is what Jesus wanted for us. Of course, you're familiar with the fact that a lot of people are going to point out that John 8:58 and that story is not originally part of John and was added much later. Some still argue, despite that maybe it was still true. But even in that story, Jesus doesn't negate the death penalty. You'll notice that, right? And you still have to account for Romans 13, you know. So, okay. Somebody says, I mean, is this really a shock? Well, no, I don't think it's a shock that a lot of people support the death penalty in the United States, despite church teaching. I think it makes sense in light of the fact that a lot of people are going to struggle to make sense of the current teaching of the Magisterium on the question. This is where I think the Magisterium really needs to help people understand the current position. Otherwise, you're just going to have a lot of people confused, and they're just going to say, well, I'm just going with the death penalty, because they just don't understand how this makes sense. So no, I'm not shocked at all. And, you know, there's been entire countries many times that have rejected some aspects of church teaching. I mean, right now the German bishops are rejecting some of the morals and teachings of the church on sexuality. And have been really since the 60s, going back to their dissent against Humanae Vitae. So, yeah, it's not a shock to me. So thank you, Paul. Paul says, Michael answered this in his video. Pope Leo answers Pope Francis's critics or something like that. It's near the end of the video. Thank you. Michael had to spend a lot of time defending Pope Francis and didn't have much time to be as critical. Correct. I've explained this, and, you know, I'm assuming Josh is asking in good faith, and that's fair if he's asking in good faith. But it does get a little old answering the same questions. But in short, you know, when the vast majority of Catholics are, at least online, are being unduly critical of the Pope and spreading misinformation about him, there then becomes a need to correct that misinformation. And there's not a lot of time to address legitimate concerns, although I still did both. Whereas now the situation is the exact opposite. And sometimes there's an undue praise of Pope Leo in spreading misinformation in his favor, when in reality, it's still misinformation in some cases, and we need to be honest and fair and balanced. And so there's more of a need to correct the misinformation that's going in the opposite direction now. So that is why people perceive it that way. But I haven't changed. I've just realized that the majority of Catholics overnight changed. They went from being outrageously unfair to Pope Francis to outrageously, I don't want to say fair to Pope Leo, because being fair is a good thing, but I think you understand what I'm saying, to the very opposite end of saying things that just simply aren't true. And I think a lot of it was due to people being incredibly, in some cases, I have to say, superficial. Maybe because he wore nice vest fins or he said some Latin and they thought the world of that. And the narrative shifted for them overnight. I didn't change. So anyways, hopefully that helps. Okay. Might need to make another trip to the Vatican. I'd be happy to go back to Rome if y'all want to pay for the ticket. So send me the money. I'll make it happen. I'll go have a conversation with the Dicastery for Communications. And be like, what's the deal, everyone? Right. Yeah. So send me a check. send me some money on PayPal or GoFundMe or Patreon. We'll make that happen. I'll get it done for you. I promise. Somebody says, I just got here. Who dress in nice vestments? Pope Leo. He has some pretty cool vestments, in my opinion. And a lot of people think that, right? But, you know, the way your vestments look doesn't really change a theological perspective, right? I mean, and his theological perspective is 100% identical to Pope Francis. So my point was, Pope Francis in many cases got constantly misrepresented by, unfortunately, Catholics. But those same standards weren't then applied to Pope Leo. And I wonder why. Well, because there was that element of superficiality on the part of a lot of people. Okay. What person says, I remember people went wild for Pope Benedict's vestments. Yeah. Yeah. People don't tend to look beyond the surface. A lot of people, there's some perspectives of Pope Benedict that I think a lot of people don't realize he held to that they would be very uncomfortable with. But again, a lot of people don't go that deep. They tend to just kind of look at questions like vestments or what people are just saying, and they just go with it. They don't dig any deeper than that. Okay, one commenter asks, would it be immoral to allow evil to reign with the recent extreme public violence? I don't know if I understand your question. Kirk assassination when government can't seem to control yourself. I don't know if I understand. Would it be immoral to allow evil to reign with the recent? Maybe if you can clarify what exactly you're asking. Like, is this in relation to the death penalty? Is it a grave matter to hold that Aquinas's view on the death penalty in extreme cases? You know, I think you're asking, it's a very complex question. Again, Donum Veritatis allows for some exceptional cases of withholding religious submission of intellect and will. Perhaps you could cite that here in your conscience. But when you say grave matter, normally it is grave matter to dissent from non-definitive teachings of the church. According to theologians, historically, normally. But again, the church has that wiggle room for withholding assent in rare cases for non-definitive teachings with all the conditions mentioned in Donum Veritatis. Okay, humble suggestion for a video. Does modernism have an actual definition? Great question. It really seems like it means more than I don't like that. Yeah, I've pointed this out numerous times. Most people use the term modernism. That's modernistic. You're a modernist. They don't know what modernism historically is. They've never read Pascendi or Lamentabili or know anything about the Oath of Fidelity or Pius X and his fight against modernism. They don't know what they're talking about. They couldn't define modernism to save their lives. In reality, most liberals today would just call neo-modernists some newer form of it. I don't know if there's a whole lot of like actual historical modernists, because historical modernists, it is a very specific thing. I do think that there's some tendencies from that heresy that are prevalent today, but I would say they've been reworked and readapted to today's situation and are a little bit different than what Pius X was dealing with. And so I would call them neo-modernists. I would distinguish them from like the OG modernists. It would be helpful to maybe do a show on that at some point again. Okay. One commenter says, I really don't see how this is congruent with both scripture and history. I just can't square this circle. I understand. I totally get it. And that's the difficulty that people are struggling with. I understand it. I get it. That's why I'm suggesting the magisterium should come out and further clarify and explain to people and offer some formation and catechesis on how to make sense out of this. Paul says, traditionally, it is rebellion against God to reject the bishop, i.e. the Pope's teachings, Catholic and Christian, by Alan Schreck. Is he the one who wrote the commentary on Vatican II? Got it right over there. You look at the manualists, for example, they feel like if you, even reject a prudential judgment of a dicastery, that's immoral and grave matter. And there are some preconciliar popes that have used that language and have said that, like, if you reject a doctrinal decision of one of the Roman dicasteries, you're in grave sin. So some popes have said that. Josh asks, did you see the recent controversy between Gordon Heschmeyer? No, I didn't. I apologize. I haven't seen that. I'm sorry. Evidently, it was about women's submission. I'm sorry. I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment on that in any substantial way. Okay. So did I grab everything there? Like I said, I'll put a link in the comment section to the video or in the show notes, not video, but the article, and go and check it out. And of course, if you think of any other questions, put them in the comment section. Happy to interact with them. And make sure to hit the like button and the subscribe button. I would also really appreciate y'all considering supporting me on Patreon. It's that time of the year. Where I totally understand funds may be short, right? Because we're taking care of our family for Christmas and everything. I get that. But if you have the means, if you're willing, do consider supporting the show. This is how I provide for my family. So if you find the content to be useful and helpful, I would greatly appreciate your support. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/reasonoftheology, and you'll get plenty of extra content there for patrons only. And also maybe check out some of my courses that I'm offering at rtcourses.com. That also goes a long way in supporting the channel. And you'll find plenty of educational material there about the magisterium and plenty of other things. So rtcourses.com. Go and check it out. All right. That's going to do it for now. See you later. God bless.